coming to get you, Barbara.
I don't know what you come to do, but I come to praise name.
Because you'll never be anything but a common frump whose father lived over a grocery store and whose mother took in washing.
Hey, y'all. It's your boy. Welcome to Hushaya. I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me in the studio today, film reviews editor at The Wrap. El mero mero de Navidad. Yes, he does like a holiday party. It's my man, Alonso Duralde. I had to really focus to get that one out. I don't know why.
Wow.
I don't know why. I usually don't have the giggles this early, but it hit me there.
Pace yourself.
Yes, sir. What's good with you, Alonso?
What's good with me, you know, despite it just being, you know, the most wonderful time of the year and all, is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's Twitter feed. She is not having it. She will come for you. And, you know, like politicians, we are so used to them being, you know, tactful and measured and, you know, saying nothing. And then we've had, of course, the last 2 years of like nightmare troll man just saying the worst stuff possible. But she like will come back with facts and figures or like, yeah, minimum wage is a good thing. What is your problem with that? And just calling out people and being smart and being unapologetically like super lefty, and I'm here for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I do not follow him. Like, I'm back in one of those, like, I can't be on Twitter that much anymore. I can't be on there.
Fair enough. I wouldn't argue that.
Yeah. But I always hear good things, and when I see articles, and it's like, or a gif of her finding out that she won the election, I'm always like, that's what's up. You go, girl. Handle all that shit. Handle all that. To my left, you won't know that because you're not in the studio, but she's sitting to my left.
I feel like I'm to your left.
Yes, you are. You are.
Like it's a feeling of being to his left.
When I close my eyes, you are to his left.
Yeah, right?
See that?
Yes. Yeah.
She's the host of the Switchblade Sisters podcast right here on Max Fun. It's Sometimes It Snows in April. April Wolf. April, what's good with you?
Two quick things. One is that I was doing research today for a project, and I like came across on a page. I was just like, "Oh, that's little Alonso's button face," because I needed to watch the Valley of the Girls doc to
Dolls.
Get a little. Oh, sorry, Valley of the Dolls. What is it? The Valley of the Dolls doc to. Yeah, research something for a thing. So that was really cute. And he's always so smart. And he's always so well-spoken. That's our little Alonzo.
That's our boy. That's our middle.
No, my button face.
But I just wanted to say that I have watched the Mac and Me episode of the MST3K
Gauntlet. Oh, my God. It's so good.
Three times now. And I just wanted to give a shout-out to Elliot Kalin of Flophouse.
Yes.
Jonah Radio on MX Fun.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Baron Vaughn was also a guest on Max Fund
on our show.
Who Shot Ya, which is the name of the show that you're listening to.
And, pretty nice.
My husband and I have been doing the pretty nice thing for just nonstop, just every day. Oh. And I don't know what it is about that, but it just cracks me up every single time. And so,
are you hurting anybody with that? Then help yourself, girl. Help yourself.
I love being enabled. I love being enabled by our guest.
That was great. That was fantastic. We are very excited for our guest as well. Series regular on The Nightly Show with Larry Wilmore, which is on Comedy Central. You can hear her voice in Spider-Man, Into the Spider-Verse.
Woo,
that's what's
right?
up. Writer and performer, ladies and gentlemen, Holly Walker.
Hello.
Holly, how are you?
All right, how are you?
Very good. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. What is good with you?
Oh, my goodness. I have to say what is good with me right now is my apartment. I have been roaming around the United States for the past month doing workshops and being a part of creative summits and just doing all sorts of things, hosting shows. And I get to be in my apartment now, and I'm so happy about it. I'm all about it. And I'm so, like, I'm just always in my bathrobe. And I feel really bad for the UPS guys that are coming over now because, you know, it's that season where they're giving you the screeners
right,
and stuff
from
the Writers Guild and SAG. And I don't even care. Like, I'm opening up the door with my hair akimbo and in my bathrobes, and I love seeing their faces. They're trying to keep a straight face, but their eyes ultimately go to my hair, and it's just because it keeps that heat miser
yes.
thing going on all yes. the time. And I don't even care. I'm just loving it. So I am. What's good with me right now is my apartment. And by the way, I love this What's Good With You segment because that's what we're supposed to be focusing on. What's good, right?
Yes.
You start out with what's good.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
well, I'm glad you
better.
Did it. Yeah, what's good? It sounds like What's Good With You is just kicking it.
Yeah. Like nobody's business. Who business is it? Nobody's.
Don't worry about it.
Ricky, what's good?
Damn it. I said. That was my second. Supposed to give that to me. Yeah.
No placeholders here.
What's good with me is, man, as a listener of hip hop, I listen to hip hop, and it just amazes me how much we just forget that Black Thought is one of the best rappers alive, you know? And because he, at the beginning of the year, he put out an album called Streams of Thought, Volume 1, and it's like a short album. There's like, I think, 8 songs on there. They're all like 2 or 3 minutes long, max. And it's just Black Thought just reminding you, like, my shit is hot. I'm the dopest MC. Whoa, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then he just came out and put another one. I don't know, like he put that album out, and we're like, damn. You know, we're so used to hearing him with the Roots. Now he's doing his own thing. And then, boom, he surprised us on Friday with another album that is just fantastic. It sounds like, I don't know if you're familiar with the album Black Rock, which is when, remember when everybody was just listening to the fucking Black Keys?
Mm-hmm,
like, the Black
mm-hmm,
Keys was
mm-hmm.
everywhere.
Yep.
And the Black Keys they just found all their favorite hip-hop producers, and they just made an album with all of them. So it's like a song with, like, Q-Tip on there, a song with Ludacris, a song with Old Dirty Bastard, a song with Noriega. I mean, it's just fucking fantastic. It's, like, a really good blend of, like, hip-hop and, like, just kind of, like, this bluesy rock sound to it. Oh, Streams of Thought Volume 2, y'all. Play that shit. It's so good. I'm excited about today's episode because the movie that we're talking about a movie, Green Book. I'm looking forward to the conversation that we're going to have about that because we want to know who was Green Book for?
Why is Green Book?
Green Book? So many questions that we are going to answer when we talk about that.
Oh, I can't wait to get into it. I can't wait.
It was an experience.
Yes, it was.
Yes. We've also got the El Mero Mero de Navidad Christmas Minute. And at the end of the show, you know, we got our staff picks for you. First, it's our news roundup game called It a Dick, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Here's how it works. I'm going to read, we're all going to read a news story or headline, and anybody can jump in with their take by answering these two questions. Is this important? Do I care? My phone blows up for two reasons. For people to, like, tell me that the McRib is back. Like, I get texts like, hey, Ricky, the McRib is back. McRib is back, Ricky. Do you know about it?
You and I have the same friends.
Or I will get just, like, movie news texts. Like, my friends be like, oh, did you hear this? And this first story is one that I heard about it because somebody texted me. And then I got an email from my man here as well.
I was going to tweet it out to you. And I was like, he's probably already heard it.
I did. They are making a musical based on the film When We Were Kings. It's going to be coming from film producer David Sonnenberg. When We Were Kings documents the famous Rumble in the Jungle boxing match between Muhammad Ali and George Foreman. It took place in Zaire in Africa. You all have to watch When We Were Kings if you're not familiar with it.
Didn't you recommend that recently?
I recommend that motherfucker on the regular.
But I mean, like,
on the regular.
I did
on the show as well, yes. But Sonnenberg, he executive produced the original documentary. It came out in 1996. And he's planning to workshop the musical in the spring of 2019 with the full stage musical production coming out the following year. So that would be 2020. The music for the film is going to be mostly R&B classics taken from the film. There was a big concert that they had before the fight, so I'm sure the musical will have those songs. And it's also going to have, I believe, the music, the one song that wasn't done at the concert because it was done by the Fugees and Q-Tip and Fife and Busta. The song's called Rumble in the Jungle. Is this important? Do you all care?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. First off, any excuse to get black men shirtless singing and dancing.
Yes.
I am all for it. Absolutely.
And there's nothing sexier than two dudes beating the crap out of each other.
That is exactly right.
You should have come to that Creed 2 discussion we had.
You know, I listened to that Creed 2 discussion. You guys did not particularly care for it that much. So I did not go to see it.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean?
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. Someone listens to you, huh?
I fear our power. Mm.
Yeah.
That's right.
But this would be a really fun musical. I would definitely see this.
It would be fantastic. Plus, they're supposed to be like having someone that represents some of the singers from that festival, mm-hmm. like Bill Withers and James Brown and the Pointer Sisters and the Spinners. I mean, come on. That has to be fantastic and fun just by itself. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a great idea. And to get African American men and women singing as well, yes, please. Yes, more of that.
I mean, do you think it would only be on Broadway? I would hope it would at least come to like Vegas so I could see it.
It seems like it would wind up in Vegas no matter what happens or how long the Broadway run goes. Then it goes to Vegas because it's a boxing musical.
I was thinking once if this show starts traveling, it's going to live on for years.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. It will probably start in maybe in Washington, D.C., like have its feet there. That's what they just did with the Temptations musical that went to Broadway. And then we'll probably go to Broadway, be fantastic, come through here, and then live at the Mandalay Bay for the rest of its existence. So.
Yes.
And there's actually a precedent. There's a musical called Golden Boy that was one of Sammy Davis Jr.'s breakout roles, and it's based on a Clifford Odets play, and it's about a boxer. So there have been boxing musicals before.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
I guess I've never. Well, didn't they do a boxing a musical about Rocky a couple years ago?
I think there was a stage version
of
Rocky.
And surprisingly, did not last long.
Yeah, huh. Closed in Philadelphia.
Oh, poor Philly.
Sorry, Cloud Atlas.
Right.
But according
Christ.
To a few scientists in Italy, The Wizard of Oz is the most influential movie of all time. In a report published in the scientific journal Applied Network Science, a group of researchers looked at over 47,000 movies on IMDb and calculated their influence. According to this study, the top five most influential films of all time in order are 1, The Wizard of Oz, 2, Star Wars, 3, Psycho, 4, King Kong, 5, 2001, A Space Odyssey. The researchers do add that since the IMDb dataset used is, quote, highly biased toward European and North American movies and personalities, our findings can be considered relevant principally for Western culture, unquote. Is this important? Do you care?
Meh.
Are these just the movies with the 5 longest connections pages? You know, the page where it tells you, like, what other movies that quoted them or when clips of them show up in other movies, like...
Yeah, this is the highlight reel. Is that... Yeah, I don't know what this...
There's been a line for a long time that like every movie since The Wizard of Oz contains a reference to The Wizard of Oz.
like the Six Degrees of Kevin Bacon type thing?
Kind of, yeah. Like it's whether, you know, we're not in Kansas anymore or like, you know, just some sort of passing thing. I mean, heck, look at Wild at Heart. You know, there's a big fat Wizard of Oz thing going on there where you've got Cheryl Lee doing Glinda the Good Witch.
Oh, damn, that's right.
I would
buy it's the most influential film of all time. It makes sense. It's story, you know. Maybe Green Book is based on it a little bit. It's a road trip. Yeah. They're trying to find each other's hearts or something. Yeah.
No
they
brain.
They were cowardly at one point.
Yeah. Hey, Doc, we're not in Kansas anymore.
Oh, I did not think that was going to happen.
Many Viggo Mortensen impressions you will hear in this episode.
And that's an actual quote from the film.
And that was spot on, by the way.
I do want to add, these guys also figured out that the most influential director is George Cukor, and the most influential actor, Samuel L. Jackson.
I mean, he's in everything, so...
I think Snakes on a Plane alone really put him over the top.
Dude, he's been... I was just doing research on him yesterday and forgot about some classics, and I was just like, oh, that's right, he was in Loaded Weapon.
And Jurassic Park.
That's right. Loaded Weapon
is your go-to.
That's the one I forgot about.
Yes. Hold on to your butts. It's Loaded Weapon.
Because it was, I think,
Loaded
the first
Weapon
time
one.
That... Yeah, Loaded Weapon 1. And it was the first time that him and Bruce Willis appeared in a movie together, but not together. weirdly enough.
I've never seen Loaded Weapons, anyway. So I guess Bruce Willis isn't Loaded Weapons?
Yeah, he's got a cameo.
Is that right? That's great.
Yeah, he's got a cameo. Anyway.
Hilarious.
I'll take this next one. Oh, good. This is a great one. All right. Fresh off the critical acclaim and success of his film First Reformed, director Paul Schrader, who was maybe most famous for writing Raging Bull and Taxi Driver, decided to take to Facebook to voice his support for alleged sexual predator, Kevin Spacey. I paused just in case because there's a lot of them.
Which
so.
One? I know. We were all breath-
like, guess
holding
which
our
one?
Breath.
That is two.
In a since-deleted post, Schrader discussed being sent a script that screamed Kevin Spacey. That's a quote from him. But when Schrader suggested this casting choice, the producer who sent him the script said that working with Spacey was, quote, not possible. Schrader then went on to say, quote, I believe there are crimes in life, but no crimes in art. Spacey should be punished for any crimes his actual person created, but not for art. All art is a crime. Punishing him as an artist only diminishes art. I said that really slow so you guys would remember how fucking insane that is. Is this important? Do you care?
I do care, but here's the deal. His logic is faulty in the sense that if Spacey should be punished for any crimes, like the actual person, but not for art, then he would be in jail.
Yes, he wouldn't be
able to. And he wouldn't be able to do this movie. So, I want swear words are the only things that are coming to my brain right now.
This is an e-podcast.
Oh, he can go fuck himself. I mean, it's just, no, you don't get to art. No, I'm sorry. Clearly the Me Too movement hasn't affected him, or he hasn't taken that into his heart or mind, really, because to say, oh, but it's art, bullshit. If it was your daughter, if it was your son, you wouldn't give a fuck about Kevin Spacey. And he's thinking about the wrong things. I'm sorry. It has to take a back seat. It has to.
Absolutely.
He's an excellent philosopher on film. And I think he's one of the greatest writers on film that we'll have. But he is fucking dumb when it comes to people.
Yes.
And it's just one of those things where you're like, okay, I just want to separate those. But philosophers, they don't often put things into real world. It's all theoretical. And they get separated from
It's not like
happening.
Artist Kevin Spacey can keep doing great work and not get money or power because of the work that he does. While sex predator, alleged, Kevin Spacey goes to prison. You're right. It doesn't work that way. I follow Paul Schrader on Facebook. And I read it when he posted it. I was like, I was gobsmacked. And thankfully, somebody had sort of beat me to it in the comments. I was like, no, that's not how any of this works. And I just sort of liked that because I didn't want to get into it. But, and the thing is, like, where is his Winter Mitchell? Where is his digital strategist?
Yeah.
Like, dude, you're in the middle of awards season. This is not what we should be talking about. We should be talking about how great First Reformed is. And now you brought this into the conversation. And it's like, ouch.
And he will realize with the feedback that he will get how he is out of line of what everyone's thinking. Not everyone's thinking in, but what's important. Like, he'll get the flack from it, hopefully.
Yeah. As soon as I saw this, I was like, oh, man, old man talking into a microphone when he shouldn't be. What are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, like, where is the person who's like, this is how you handle this type of situation?
But it wasn't even old man talking into a microphone. He took the time to write this out.
Sure. Yeah, you're right.
You know what I mean?
You're right.
And make sure that he had enough words in this. In the tweet, like he did this on purpose. It wasn't like he was drunk and it came off the top of his head. He took the time to do this.
He's like,
so,
yes, the world needs to know. Yes.
Just going to give myself enough rope and send.
Like he's like Holly at home in his robe waiting for screeners, and he's like, you know what? I'm going to make that UPS guy wait just for a second because I've got to make sure that's out here. And my husband, I was texting him as you were talking because I needed to remember we have a Roku with a Sling TV thing, and there's a screensaver-ish kind of screen. That it has, and it keeps like suggesting, like, there's just a picture of a Kevin Spacey movie called Casino Jack that doesn't look real. That, like, it keeps scrolling across and it's like, watch for free. And I'm like, what the fuck? It just made me think of that. I was like, what is that movie? Casino Jack.
I saw it. He plays Jack Abramoff. But it came out the same year as an actually good documentary about Jack Abramoff. Oh. So it's like, why would you bother with the stupid Kevin
Spacey? It's the best thing that it just keeps going past. It's alone. They aren't recommending any other movie. It's just a screensaver that's just like, watch it for free.
Spacey is coming from inside the house. Yo, we are going to take a break. When we come back, we will be talking about Green Book. You're listening to Who Shot Ya?
Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Hello, this is Griffin McElroy.
And this is Wonderful.
It's a podcast that we do as we are married. And how's the ad going so far? Because I think it's going very good.
We talk about things we like every week on Wednesdays.
One time Rachel talked about pumpernickel bread. It was so tight. You cannot afford to miss her talking about this sweet brown bread.
We also talk about music and poems and, you know, weather.
There was one... Weather? One time Rachel talked about Baby Beluga, this song, for like 14 minutes. And it just really blew my hair back.
So check us out on MaximumFun.org.
It's a cool podcast with chill vibes. Amber is the color of our energy, is what all the iTunes reviews say.
They will now.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me in the studio today are...
April Wolf.
Holly Walker.
Alonzo Duraldi.
Today we are talking about Green Book. Alonzo, if you could please give us a quick synopsis of this movie.
If any five words put the utter fear into the base of my spine that based on a true story this is based on a true story. So Mahershala Ali plays legendary pianist Dr. Don Shirley. He lives in a swanky apartment above Carnegie Hall, and it's the early 60s, and he's going to do a tour of the Deep South, and he needs a driver, preferably one who, is a tough guy. And so he winds up hiring Tony Lip, played by Viggo Mortensen, a bouncer at the Copa. And as they make their way into the South, they kind of bond because it's a road trip. But then also working class Tony keeps teaching the fancy pants Don Shirley how to be black because he doesn't eat fried chicken or listen to Aretha Franklin.
You don't know who Little Richard is?
And,
that's another one, thank you.
These are your people. Hey.
And, then they like the It's one of those movies where the white guy learns things. He sees that Dr. Shirley can play piano at the fancy houses, but they won't let him use the bathroom. And he can play at the fancy country clubs, but they won't let him eat in the dining room. And
pretty regularly, that's what happens.
That's
everything he wants to do. Oh, you can't do that. I'm surprised.
Who knew? Because apparently, also according to this movie, in the early 1960s, the South was terrible for black people, but the North and the Midwest were great.
Solid.
Totally
never
fine.
A problem at all. The Green Book of the title refers to a guidebook for black travelers in the South to know places that were safe, places where they would be welcome. But the movie is just another sort of ridiculous narrative designed to make contemporary white audiences feel like they weren't responsible for racism being part of the American system. Yeah. The end!
The credits! You hit on two very important things there, that it's being looked upon as, and it really does come off as a movie that is supposed to make white people feel good. And something that we talked about, one of the reasons we wanted to talk about this movie on the show is who exactly is this movie for? What is the audience that this movie was geared to? I feel like if this movie would have came out in, the early 1990s or like mid-1990s, it is going to win all the Oscars. Hmm. It is in that Driving Miss Daisy category.
It was Driving Miss Daisy reverse.
I felt like they knowingly tried to give it that kind of like, hey, you've seen other movies where it works out this way, but then, it's still him teaching them how to eat fucking food.
The white guy is driving the car.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, can you look in that car over there? The white guy is driving. There's a lot of shots of that. But yeah,
it's weird when there's just one person in the backseat of your car anyway. Like, that's just a weird
thing.
Now it's more normal because it's Uber. But yeah. Back then, it's like, what the fuck is happening? Why are you doing this?
Well, if the movie was designed for white people to feel good about themselves, then it's for white people, right?
Is that white audience? Is that white audience still around though? I mean, the white audience that I saw it with yesterday, the older white audience, they were fucking eating it up.
Oh my goodness! The old white folks that I saw it with were eating it up too. Yeah, they loved it.
And like the younger crowd who was there, myself included, I was just kind of like, what the fuck are we doing here? You know, like,
well, Mark Harris had a great piece where he talked about how this is a kind of narrative that goes at least as far back as In the Heat of the Night, which is you put a black character and a white character together and the white person learns lessons about racism, but the black person also learns to be more relaxed or to not judge all white people the same or da, da, da. So it's this weird thing of like white people can feel like they aren't being lectured because the black guy learns a thing too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He learns to get off his high horse and was a fancy Carnegie Hall guy.
Right. You know? Right.
But these movies just like make me break out into hives. Like I got into so many arguments with people after The Help because what these movies are designed to do are to make white viewers think, oh, well, when racism happened, it's because there were mean people and nice people. And if I had been there, I would be nice like that Emma Stone and not mean like that Sissy Spacek. Right. And it's like, no, it's not about mean people and nice people. It's about systemic, baked into the American contract, you know, racism and how it is fully organized and fully ingrained into society and not just a matter of some people were nice and some people were mean.
Yeah.
There's like some part of this movie where I think it does serve a white audience in a different way where it's like, you should remember that, you know, most of y'all were ethnic whites and people weren't always nice to you, but still, your pain was fucking nothing compared to anyone who was African-American in the U.S. I just feel frustrated because there is a way where the story could work, potentially, from the point of view of the black character. And that's just
Here's a crazy idea. Let's let him tell the story.
I know. Why would you ever do
that? Slow down.
Slow your roll, sister girl.
Some of the more kind of like, even like eye-rolling stuff, I think still could have actually worked as long as it was seen through his eyes. You know, because I just, it's weird to think like you could take the script, remake it with just through his eyes, and it would be like a million times better.
It feels to me like this movie is kind of like a baby step for people who don't realize what went on. I do believe that there are a lot of people in this country still who believe that racism is over. They don't understand why it is so baked into this nation, because I don't think that they do get it. And I do think that if for even just an hour and a half, they go, oh, yeah, that was craptastic. Like, I think that there are people that are completely blinded from things that have happened. And if you have two star names and you get them into the theater and you get white people into the theater to watch this, then they may take a baby step towards realizing the injustices that we had to go through and are still growing through. So I don't know. I don't think this was necessarily for an African-American audience. I mean, I'm not sure that, I didn't know as much about Dr. Don Shirley as I wanted to, so I will probably do more research on him. So that was fantastic for me. But other than that, like, I knew all of it. Like, I didn't tune in until really he got to the African-American bar and started, am I allowed to do spoilers? And
yes,
he started to play classical music. Like, that to me was a beautiful thing. Like, I loved that and how we were so warm and welcoming to different musical styles, which we are. So, yeah, other than that scene, really, the rest of it to me was like, is there any more popcorn in this bucket?
That scene in particular, I did enjoy that scene very much. Mm-hmm. I really liked the contrast of him playing classical music. And, I mean, it's just, you know, that's not what they're listening to mm-hmm. at that bar. But then it falls into that white man savior narrative in the scene right after that, where when they're leaving the bar and, you know, they're both mm-hmm. like pretty drunk. And I mean, Mahershala Ali's character, Dr. Don Shirley, is not talking in his like very reserved manner anymore. It came across to me as like, oh, Viggo Mortensen has taught him how to embrace his blackness now. And now he can like walk around and be like, yo, you know what, Doc? Let's go to like that next spot and handle all that. I was just like, why is he talking like this now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. and because, you know, and Viggo got him there.
Let's talk about the pink elephant in the room, which is like, oh, by the way, also gay. Or at least bi.
Yep. Right.
And that gets glancingly touched on in one scene that's totally ridiculous, with Viggo Mortensen being like, I work in the show business. I see all kinds. I'm like, I don't believe that. I do not believe this guy, as presented to us so far in the movie, would be so, oh, well, gay people, whatever. But also the movie, like, you know, never wants to connect the dots of the fact that, like, Dr. Shirley, they show him as being, like, not only a stranger or an outsider in the white man's world, but even with other black people. Like, he, you know, they don't get along. He feels better than them. You know, he's at a motel and you can see him sort of, like, judging everybody around him. And it's like, well, maybe the fact that not only is he, like, super, you know, cultured and you know, plays the fancy music, but is also a gay guy in yeah. the 1960s,
yeah.
might be part of why he feels estranged from his own community. But that's a dot this movie does not care to connect.
I want this other movie from his perspective.
Yes. Yes.
Like he's such an interesting character. And you see the pictures of him that they showed at the end, yeah. and you're just like, yeah. that guy really looked like that and dressed with that, like, kind of beautiful ensemble of like, I don't know, is it like
it was just regal, like yeah. royal, yeah. like African garb,
yeah.
like,
absolutely.
The first thing that he comes out and like sits like in that throne above him, yeah,
it's beautiful.
Yeah, he looks like a king. You
I
know?
Will say, mm-hmm. like, shout out to the wardrobe in this movie, like everything yes. that Mahershala Ali was wearing. I was like, yep, give me that.
Yep,
give me that.
Yep,
give me that.
One of those. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. There's. Am I crazy to say? Like, I was expecting to just be, like, eye-rolling the whole fucking time and being like, this movie is... I still was entertained somehow. And that, I'm like I thought Viggo Mortensen was funny.
It is certainly a manipulated piece of entertainment. Like, it is designed in, like, the food labs of New Jersey to sort of like be, you know, hit these beats
like candy,
have these yeah, comedy absolutely. Moments, have these musical moments to sort of keep you going along. They cast two actors who are way better than the material,
right.
yes.
Actually
right.
more than the two of them, because also right. like Linda Cardellini,
absolutely,
you know. And so they you know, I had a discussion with somebody where she was like, you know what, I agree with everything you have to say about this movie, and yet it works for me. And
yeah.
I think it's because it is so meticulously crafted as this sort of like award season bauble, that if you don't want to think about how reprehensible it is in so many ways, you can just be coasted along by what a well-made film it is.
Do you think that it's going to be part of award season?
Hell yes.
You think so?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Viggo's been in those round tables, right? Like, he's been invited to a lot
yes.
of those?
Yeah. He does, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they're making the rounds. I've seen them, like, when I was doing research for this, like, they are out there doing the interviews.
It'll be interesting to see what the younger and more diverse Academy has to say about
that. That's why
that.
I'm asking.
Because in the last couple of years, they've added so many new members.
They have.
Who are, like, under 50.
Yeah.
And a lot of people of color and a lot of queer people. Yes. And a lot of, you know, like, you're right. In the mid-90s, yeah, give it all
this
the awards.
This movie wins
yeah.
everything.
Yeah. Now, maybe not so much.
Well, but they still have a lot of old white people on the
board. Oh, sure.
Board.
Yeah.
So
no question.
I think they are going to be like, yay. absolutely.
And are they still into this kind of movie?
Absolutely. Yeah. Are you kidding? They also have, I mean, you got this character in there that's always talking. I'm going to eat 97 hot dogs, you know, yeah. and win $50. Like, you have that guy. So, of course, like, that's old school. That's old school white folks. So I absolutely believe that they would love this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. Are you kidding?
A little bit. I
mean, absolutely. Kinda,
yeah. And it also, again, sort of, you know, if for those who were around for the 60s and remember it, it now retroactively lets them off the hook.
Right.
Yeah. Would this movie have been different if it was directed by a black person? Yeah. A black director?
Yes.
Obviously.
Absolutely.
Yeah. yeah.
Absolutely. And I think that they may have touched on the idea more of what is black and what is white. Mm. And just because he's African American and playing classical music, that does not make him any less black than if he played soul music. Mm-hmm. So I do think that would be touched upon more. There was actually a big speech that he delivered that had me up until the very end, and then I was like, but yeah, I think if it were an African American director, absolutely, it would be a different story. I think if it were a homosexual director, a gay director, it would have been a different story as well.
And writers as well, because, like, you know, Tony Lip's son co-wrote this thing with Peter Farrelly and one other white guy.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's very much a white perspective, and also written by the perspective of, like, my dad, he was a swell guy.
When I saw that name pop up in the credits that it was his son, I was like, man, I got like that Straight out of Compton vibe. Like, oh, we're getting like the nice guy version of how these events went down.
Can we say also that, like, the fact that Peter Farrelly is making this movie is kind of weird?
Well, it's a departure.
It definitely feels like, you know, I mean, he's a director known for, like, comedies, and this is, like, him
is
doing,
like Kingpin,
serious
but
work.
I think this is a sequel to Kingpin.
he does do a road picture, you know.
Yeah. Which is
Kingpin and Dumb and Dumber was a road picture.
Yeah, yeah. You did just remind me, April. Peter Farrelly, nobody on his research team reached out to Dr. Don Shirley's family.
No, that would make it too hard. I have to rewrite the story.
We got Tony Lip.
And Dr. Don Shirley said, or I heard, that he wanted it to happen after he was dead. Like, he was like, I don't even want this to happen while I'm alive. And I wonder if that had something to do with it, where he was just like, I don't want to be a part of this.
Yeah.
Wait until I'm dead before you eat it, because I know what you're going to do with the story, and it's going to be dumb.
Not involved. Here's me washing my hands.
I'm washing my hands. I'm just going to roll right on over after you put it out there, because in my grave, because I just do not want to be a part of this.
Is there a movie that you would recommend? I'm asking this, anybody that anybody would recommend that does kind of do what Green Book is trying to do? Does do it right?
I remember this is a film that nobody saw that I really liked from the '90s called The Long Walk Home. With Whoopi Goldberg and Sissy Spacek.
I remember that movie. It was on HBO all the time.
Okay.
I like that movie.
It was the same year as Ghost. And I like to think that, like, Whoopi got her Ghost Oscar because they also saw The Long
Walk. Oh, all right.
But Whoopi Goldberg plays a housekeeper for Sissy Spacek, and it's the Montgomery bus boycott.
Yes.
And so it's all about her being a part of this thing that, you know, Dr. King had started, and you know, everybody not taking the bus because of the policies of the Montgomery bus. And it to me, it just felt like one of the movies that seemed to get the fact that this is a black story and the black point of view is more interesting and more relevant to what's going on. Mm-hmm. So, like, Sissy Spacek's character, you know, is involved in the story and stuff, but it's really about Whoopi Goldberg and, like, her daughter and you know, the various black characters in the film and how they are getting involved. You know, people who were not traditionally activists or protesters were getting involved in this movement, and even though at great, you know, cost to themselves in terms of, you know, having to walk and being jeered at on the side of the road by passing motorists and that kind of thing. But yeah, just there's so many of these movies that it's like, what did white people think about this?
Yeah.
But this is like, I mean, I think the comedies do it much better than these dramas. I mean, if you look back at Trading Places even, or Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder and the things that they were doing in their comedies, like, I think that they were getting at this stuff, but in a different way. And And I think it was just more honest. Mm-hmm. It felt more honest. And this feels very contrived, you know, you're trying to like get on your heartstrings and stuff. But it's, if you want like an actual kind of straightforward discussion about that, I think you're going to find it probably in those Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder.
One movie for me that touched on this very well was Paddington. I thought it was.
Uh-oh. Here we go. Let it out, bro. Let it out, bro.
We're holding hands now.
I got you.
Go on. I want to hear all of this.
I was just kidding. But now you don't want to hold my hand anymore.
Well, you know, he is an outsider who really brings the people together.
And they don't understand how it is for a bear.
Yeah.
And the focus is on the bear and not the white
Paddington
people.
Paddington 2 is totally about Brexit. So I thought I was with you on this, but okay, fine. Jerk me around.
That's great that you said that you brought up Trading Places, April, because I thought of Trading Places. I thought of 48 Hours. Going back to just like the original, like, who's this movie for? It's not for me. I mean, I grew up when I was like fucking really being like, oh, I watch movies. Mm-hmm. It was like when Driving Miss Daisy hit, mm-hmm. and people were going crazy about that. But, you know, people were also being upset about this movie, Do the Right Thing. And I was like, oh, well, what's up with this Do the Right Thing movie? And then seeing what that's about. So, like, I immediately knew, like, oh, I'm going to grow up liking more movies. If they're going to deal about racism, I'm going to want them to look like this, mm-hmm. and not come in from this Driving Miss Daisy route. I don't need your fucking Dangerous Minds. I mean, we haven't even touched on like movies like that.
Cry Freedom.
Cry Freedom is not good. Actually, I've never seen.
Is Cry Freedom the one that's about Kevin Kline, but it's about apartheid?
Oh yes, with Denzel.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. The Steve Biko one. Yeah, yes.
Fuck
yes.
that movie.
What was apartheid like for Kevin Kline? You know?
It was very difficult.
Okay. Well, let's go around. I mean, I get the vibe of what the answers are going to be here, but let's let the people know. Should they screen it, stream it, or skip it? I'll start with you, April.
I think you can skip it. Yeah.
Absolutely. Skip it. Hop, skip, jump it, hopscotch it, skip it completely.
Double dutch over.
Just double dutch over.
Yes,
double dutch over, by all means.
Yeah, you can't skip this one hard enough.
Yeah, yeah, this is a skip, y'all. I mean, if you are, like, stuck somewhere, you know, the holidays are happening. If you're stuck somewhere with your racist grandma and you have run out of things, maybe Green Book will, like, you know, be like, hey, grandma, watch this and... She'll be on board with it, but yeah, don't need to subject yourself to this one, y'all. We are gonna take a break. When we come back, hey, we're gonna get a call on the chat line. And Holly, I don't know if you've ever seen somebody tweak out over Christmas, but our man here.
You know my name's Holly though, right?
That's what I said.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I see where this is going. All right, we're gonna take a break, y'all. We'll be back.
Hey, it's Janet Varney of the JV Club podcast, and I am so excited to be joining Maximum Fun. If you're not yet familiar with the JV Club, it's a podcast with me and some of my favorite women, and in the summer, men, as we explore the highs and lows of our terrible teenage years into what I like to call our adult lessons. For example, hear Emily Heller describe her time on the national circuit for the debate team, or how Travis McElroy took over his drama class and gave his fellow students notes. Yeah, that went over great. Or let Busy Phillips tell you how she met Sharon Stone at an Arizona toy fair. You can join me and all my once awkward, sometimes still awkward friends every Thursday by subscribing to the JV Club on MaximumFun.org.
Hey, welcome back to Who Shout Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me in the studio today are...
Alonzo Duraldi.
Holly Walker.
April Wolf.
Thank you. We're gonna listen to a call from the chat line, but I want to give a thank you to... We had an unnamed caller last week when we were taking calls. That was our boy, Mark, from Chicago. So thank you, Mark, for calling in. This week, we've got a call from... Oh, man, we are worldly right now, yo. I like when we go worldwide.
Global.
Yes. Today, we have a question from Kate. It's all the way from Germany. Let us take a listen, please.
Hi, this is Kate calling from Germany. I love the show. I had a question for all of you. Could you name a character from a movie that really contributed to making you the person that you are today? Thanks. Keep doing what you do. Bye.
Oh, I like that question. I have a very easy answer, or it's easy for me. I mean, I was just talking about Spike Lee. Like, I go to the Church of Spike, and when I saw Malcolm X, like, that movie just changed my life. I saw it, like, 7 times in the theater, and, like, I went to, like, a mosque for a year.
What?
Yeah. I mean, I was in high school, and I was, I mean, like impressionable brain was in full effect at that point. And
Did you read the book?
I read the book. I got it signed by Spike Lee a couple years later. Yeah. I mean, it's one of the, like, all I had known about Malcolm X was just, like, you know, the Keras one album cover, which Malcolm's not in, but Keras is doing a cover of someone of Malcolm X, and that he was, like, angry Martin Luther King. Like, that's, you know, just very, like, surface level shit like that. So, I mean, just from fucking frame one, you see that flag start burning, the American flag, and it forms the X, and I mean, and then we're introduced to Denzel as Malcolm. Like, oh, easy. Yeah, Malcolm X for me.
I thought you were going to say Mars Blackmon.
Well, my second answer is Pootie Tang. Malcolm and Pootie Tang.
Pootie Tang.
I think I've seen Pootie Tang like 13 times.
Pootie Tang's amazing.
It's so funny. So good. I have it on my DVR. I do. I love me some Pootie Tang. It's
Warata.
Warata. Put your money on the runny kind.
Sign your pity.
Sign your pity on the runny kind.
Mama, can I get me on some jammies?
Oh, right, I'm going to watch that tonight.
Oh, God. It's
going to take good care of you. Going to have sex with you, too.
And he just eats that pie. I mean, come on. It's fantastic.
Does anybody else have one?
God. I mean, you know, my first thought was Chris Knight in Real Genius, just because I started wearing T-shirts with unbuttoned short sleeve shirts over them. But I don't know that I have one. April?
Oh, I mean, for movies, I don't know. I mean, I was Punky Brewster as a child. I still am.
And that stopped happening when?
So it really hasn't changed much since then. But I was always obsessed with Gilda Radner's character in Haunted Honeymoon. Mm-hmm. Not what you thought. Right? She was so beautiful. She had frizzy hair, and I also had frizzy hair. And she was very funny, but also very delicate. And I just really enjoyed her as a female character in a movie. And I watched that movie so many. And maybe Dom DeLuise in that movie, cross-dressing, potentially also informed me as much as Gilda Radner's character. So Haunted Honeymoon, I guess.
My first thought was Paddington.
Don't play with my heart. We're done here.
Okay, no. But then I realized that it was Whoopi Goldberg. She was very inspirational for me. And I remember seeing her. I don't know if technically this is considered a movie, but it was her Broadway show that was shot
For
HBO.
For HBO.
That was amazing.
It changed my world. It changed my world. Watching her do Fontaine, watching her do the little girl with the long, luxurious blonde hair.
Yes.
And watching the woman who had, I don't remember if she had something that was different about her spine, and then she opened up and when she imagined it, her brain, that her body was free. It told me that African-American females could do this. And for me as a performer, I went, I'm African-American. Because she's done it, that means I can do it. And that changed the game for me. And I remember seeing it in high school and just being blown away. And doors opened for me when I saw her. And then she turned around and was Celie in The Color Purple. And my brain just went, because it said, yes, I can do that. So that's what
she
it was for
made
me.
Performance art cool.
Absolutely.
And that's like a real hard thing to do, because it's also kind of cheesy sometimes. But you watch her, and she's like transforming from character to character. Mm-hmm.
That led into the decade where, you know, Dennis Leary's No Cure for Cancer became published as a play. But when she did it, it was awesome.
And, but she was also saying something when she was performing. Mm-hmm. And it was just a miraculous thing for me. It made me go, oh, okay, then I need to get to work.
Yeah.
Because it's a possibility for me.
Yeah. It's really like, I remember watching it, and it's not stand up, you know. It's like something. It was something more than that.
It was a one woman show.
Yeah, and it was like when you're like just growing up, like watching stand up, and just used to Richard Pryor, and like, you know, like seeing somebody do that, you're like, oh wait, we can do that too.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing Richard Pryor as well, and I loved that, and my mom and dad. And my mom and older brother had Richard Pryor comedy albums, and they immediately said, do not listen to these. And, of course, the second they left the house, I listened to them. And so that was fantastic and amazing, but it was different to see a woman do this for me, an African-American woman do this, because it men doing things was something that was out of my reach. It just, whether they were black or white, but a woman being able to do this and rock a show and speak to me, it was a game changer. A game changer.
Alright. Well, Kate, I hope you like Alonzo. You want one more shot for somebody?
No pressure. The closest I have to that is just seeing Roger Ebert on TV as a kid and being like, that's a job?
Yes! We'll take that. Yeah, definitely. Well, there you go, Kate. Yeah, I hope we answered your question. Thank you very much for calling in.
Thanks, Kate.
Thanks for listening to the show as well.
Avita Zane.
Yeah. Anybody else, if you have questions that you want to ask us, or, you know, it could be, you know, questions about...
Deep questions.
Deep questions. You can call us. The number is WSY-803-1664.
I'm sorry, what was that number again?
It is WSY-803-1664. Yeah. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to...
Yeah, can you wrap the number next time? Yeah.
Operators are standing by.
That WSY-803-1664. All right, enough of that, Ricky. Now it is the time before we go where if you can start to smell... like cinnamon in the air.
Gingerbread
cookies.
I'm going to get my eggnog out.
Yes, exactly. It is time for the El Mero Mero de Navidad Christmas Minute. Alonzo has been taking us these past couple weeks and will take us all the way through Christmas. His Magic Minute on Christmas movies, what he's watching.
Two quick things before we get rolling. One, I will not be talking about the Candace Cameron Bure vehicle, A Shoe Addict's Christmas, because I did a whole episode of the Deck the Hallmark podcast about that. One of their hosts, by the way, big fan of this show.
Oh,
which is very exciting to hear. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Dan.
So, if you want to hear more about that, go listen to that one. Because I haven't been nearly flagrant enough about plugging it this season, I wrote this book called Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas, and you should totally go buy it.
Oh, my God. What is it called? What's it called?
And also, Ricky is from Chicago.
Because we do have new listeners from last year
who
don't know that you wrote a book called Have Yourself a Merry Little
Movie
Little Christmas, which I did last year too. So I feel like I need to fill them in that I keep getting it wrong.
Hey, April, do you know what a good stocking stuffer would be?
Oh my God, what?
Well, there's this book out that's called Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. You really should get it.
Oh my God. Yeah, I bet it's the exact size of a stocking.
That's exactly right.
They made it. They're like, how big is the stocking? Standard.
Right.
Perfect.
Out came the rulers.
Perfect.
All right, Casey, if you can start the timer back there, please.
Okay, so this one's streaming, I'll Be Next Door for Christmas, a little overdone, but some fun comedy people in it and some interesting slapstick if you're into that sort of thing. All right, then meanwhile, over at Hallmark, Mingle All the Way, one of those movies that doesn't really understand how apps work and is kind of mostly dumb, although it should be noted that Lindsay Wagner is still a goddess. Majestic Christmas, hey, it's a Hallmark movie with black people, which almost never happens, but we got two this week, that one and Christmas Everlasting, which was the Hall of Fame film. Both of them are kind of whatever, but at least Christmas Everlasting has Patti LaBelle in it wearing a crazy wig. Christmas on Honeysuckle Lane has Alicia Witt, and she makes any movie better. And pretty decent Fake Snow, but it's kind of run-of-the-mill. Christmas Wonderland, really good chemistry between the two leads, but it's ridiculous. And then Once Upon a Christmas Miracle, there's a liver transplant. You can live without it. Christmas Wonderland, interestingly, the leads are very charming, but at certain angles, they both look like characters from David and Goliath. I don't know what that's about exactly.
Boom! My man, now you're getting it down to a science, yo.
But I feel like you left us dangling with that Christmas liver.
Oh, no!
That's a real thing that happens.
Dude, you gotta deliver on that Christmas liver.
In my head, it's like a horror film, and they eat his liver?
Apparently, if you are a tissue type match, you can donate half of your liver to somebody because yours will grow back.
Oh.
Huh.
I did not know this. Thing I learned from Hallmark movies and mysteries.
Can you put that in a stocking? Merry Christmas. My liver.
Y'all, before we go, it is time for our staff picks. Every week we ask the panel to tell us about a movie we think folks should check out. Any movie at all. Alonzo, what do you got for us?
Well, this is a movie that's going to be opening wider later, but it's opening this weekend as part of its Oscar run, and that would be Mary Queen of Scots, which sounds like a movie you don't want to see, but trust me, it is. It is the, you know, historical tale of, you know, Mary Queen of Scots and Queen Elizabeth I and their sort of, you know, rivalry and Mary trying to establish a Catholic throne for herself. But it feels very contemporary. It was written by Beau Willimon, who's one of the guys behind House of Cards. So he really makes the political stakes interesting. And, you know, it feels relevant. It feels like these are two really strong women who are unfortunately surrounded by the patriarchy, even to the point that they each are a standard bearer for their different religions. I include Jesus in that patriarchy. And it is directed by a woman, Josie Rourke, who is a British theater director. I think this is her screen debut. But it's dynamite. The lead performances by Saoirse Ronan as Mary and Margot Robbie as Elizabeth I are terrific. And you can tell Margot Robbie was like, yes, cover me in scabs. I don't want any glamour. And so she's leaning into the whole, like, Elizabeth I shaved eyebrows, bald thing going. But they're both really good. And, you know, they just kind of either half manipulate and half manipulated by the men around them, including Jack Loudon and Joe Alwyn. And, yeah, it's pretty cool. I was surprised at how much I liked it.
I heard Josie Rourke had said in her round table that she was like, I'm making a period piece, but I sure as fuck was not going to make one without people of color.
So, yes.
There's people of color in this
movie?
Yeah,
Adrian Lester is in this movie.
I thought I should mention that.
And Gemma Chan. Yes, thank you. I forgot about that.
Are they CGI?
Oh, my God.
There are people of color, okay. And there are queer characters in this movie.
What?
I know.
Because it turns out there were actually queer people and people of color back then.
No way.
Then.
No
Isn't
way.
That crazy?
We were born in the 1970s.
Oh, my God.
All of us.
You should talk to Ingo about that movie because she spent all day yelling at me about how much she hated it. Anyway.
Well, no wonder I liked it.
I know, right?
April, what do you got?
I got two quick ones. Happy as Lazaro, I think people should watch. It's on Netflix now, and it is a really wonderful movie written and directed by Alice Rohrwacher. Rohrwacher. Mm-hmm. And it is magical, and there is a kind wolf in it.
Mm.
Which, it's like a very fairy tale-ish kind of thing, and it's very strange, and I would just watch it and just kind of hang with it, and you'll be surprised at where it goes.
And it won Best Screenplay at Cannes.
Yeah, it did.
Ooh.
Yeah,
okay.
It's a really beautiful film.
What's that name again?
It's Happy as Lazaro, and that's Lazzaro. And so you just search for it on Netflix.
Got it.
And yeah. You'll find it.
I will check it out.
And the one that is coming out in theaters right now is Clara's Ghost. And it's written and directed by Bridie Elliott, starring Bridie, Abby Elliott, Chris Elliott, and the mother of the family, Paula Neidert Elliott. And it is the whole Elliott family. And it is super weird, as you would imagine.
Yes.
Elliott family. And it is like, it's like almost a thriller, but not. And it's funny. And it's about a beleaguered mother who's just like, no one pays attention to her in this family of entertainers. And mm-hmm. she's just like, so actually the mother who's not an actor is a star and she's fucking hilarious.
Oh, great.
And I suggest this movie if you want something that's just kind of light and strange. Mm-hmm. And Haley Joel Osment plays a character who I didn't recognize him. He's put on some weight, but he's still he's still just as charming. You know, he's like, he's still a great
shade.
Actor.
quite the opposite,
no,
young lady.
No, no. He's
I heard that as
yes,
like, okay. Okay.
Yes, he has.
Alonzo, oh, okay. Yes. All right.
Alonzo would let him know his head.
I see hot people.
My man. Yeah, dog.
Well, you definitely want to see Clara's ghost.
That yes, is hilarious.
There's a ghost in it, and it's weird. There's like a haunted house thing, and it's strange.
All right. And where is that movie?
That's going to be in some theaters and also on VOD.
Okay. Excellent. All right. Holly, what do you got for
us? Well, I am going to recommend a movie that is on HBO right now. Like, right now they're saying people are having debates on whether they like Love Actually or not Love Actually.
Oh, okay.
Should they or should they not watch Love Actually? Well, you don't have to even worry about that. You can just skip over that and watch a different Richard Curtis movie. Mm. And it's called About Time. And it is super cute, and it is not a full-on period piece, and by that I mean you watch it when you're on your period.
there's a category of movie like that, right? Yeah,
exactly. It is very funny. It is very British. It's very dry, and there is romance in it, but ultimately it is a father and son movie. Margot Robbie is actually in it as well, and it is very well acted. I never can pronounce this guy's
Donal.
Name. Thank you, Donal Gleeson.
Donal.
Have you seen this movie
I
before?
Have.
What did you think of the movie?
It's all right.
It's all right?
It's all right.
I thought it was very charming. And it's
Rachel McAdams, and it's
yes,
hard to say no to Rachel McAdams.
Absolutely. That's exactly right. I think she's super cute and super charming. And for me, it's about how you spend your time and how you spend your days and how you appreciate the things that are around you. And for me, it was just lovely and charming.
Yeah. I fucks with Love Actually so much that when I saw that movie was on HBO, I was like, I'm going to fuck with that movie.
Yes.
I'm going to do that.
Yes.
Hell yeah.
You know what else is on HBO Go right now?
What's that?
Paddington 2.
It is. Yeah, it is.
You know what? I'm going to fuck with that movie.
You better.
With that movie. That's right. I'm going to fuck with that
all
movie.
All night long.
All night long.
The movie that I'm recommending, I mean, I saw Green Book last night, and I said, what can I do that can just snap me out of it? What can I watch that'll just snap me out
get
of this?
Get the taste out of your mouth.
Get this taste out of my mouth.
You just folded a pizza in half.
Hey, Netflix, what movie should I watch? I'm a thievy.
I would watch that movie all day.
Well, lo and behold, Netflix was like, Ricky, you know you want to watch Barry Gordy's The Last Dragon, son. And you're goddamn right I did. You're goddamn right I did. And that movie is, like, there's certain movies where it's like, how did, like the podcast, like, how does The Last Dragon have a how did this get made? Because I want to know how that movie got made. It's a Motown.
It's in the title. Barry
Gordy.
It's a Motown produced kung fu kind of music. I mean, not musical, but there's like, you know, there's
a soundtrack.
There's a soundtrack that is heavily featured in it. You got El DeBarge up in that mug, yo. Vanity up in that mug. Fun fact, how you're here today, the score by Willie Hutch. I don't know if you're familiar. Willie Hutch did I Choose You. Willie Hutch did the soundtrack to The Mac back in the day.
Oh.
Yes. You all know who Willie Hutch is. You just don't know Willie Hutch.
Okay,
you know his work.
Yes, indeed. So, The Last Dragon, and actually the less you know about it, the better as well. Just realize it's 1985. kung fu breakdancing and
brothers
got
to work it out.
Yes.
I got you.
But it's going to work it out. But it's going to work it out. Yeah, that shit is hot. Hey, y'all, next week we're going to be talking about another movie that involves music. Next week we'll be talking about, am I pronouncing it right even? Vox Lux?
I think so.
Vox Lux.
Vox. Next week we will be speaking about Vox Lux, starring Natalie Portman. Vox Lux, starring Natalie Portman. Are we going to have a guess on that? We don't know yet.
Natalie Portman.
Do that. I like when you're on SNL and you rap, Natalie. Do that.
More rapping, please.
You know who this movie was for? Natalie Portman. Green Book was for Natalie Portman.
Yes, it was. If you like what you're hearing, would you please leave us that good review on Apple Podcasts? 5-star reviews. Get a shout-out on the show. Shout-out to Shepasm, who says, I love this podcast. Listening to Who Shall You feels like grabbing a beer with my friends, Ricky, April, Alonzo, Andrew. Ricky and Drea, if you're listening, your name was misspelled. I know your name is Drea. They give fun, informative takes on the latest movies, and I cannot get enough. Ricky does hate musicals, but it's cool. Alonzo loves Christmas movies enough to make up for it. My man.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Holly, for being here. It was a pleasure.
You're welcome.
I hope you enjoyed this thing we call a show.
I can't believe it's over already. Yeah. I had so many more Paddington jokes to throw out there.
Is that like what's on the...
That's what she brought the iPad in for.
Oh, I was like, shit. She's like, I'm loaded. I'm strapped with these.
She would love to say, but her name is Holly, and she has to go to a small town and learn to love Christmas.
Where can people find you online? Or where can people see your work? What's going on with you next?
Oh my gosh, I am all over the place. Okay. What they can do next is listen for me in the upcoming movie Spider-Man.
Indeed.
Into the Spider-Verse.
Which is awesome.
I was about to say, Alonzo is blowing that muffle.
Who are you in that film?
I'm a couple of voices. Ooh. I am a teacher.
Okay.
And I'm also some scientists that are kind of losing their minds.
Well,
so, yeah.
Still, I think at 100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I think it is.
It?
Yeah. It's really good.
Word. That's what's up. Hey, if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, you can tweet at us at WhoShallYouPod. You can send us an email at WhoShallYouMaximumFun.org. You can leave us a message on the Who Shall line. The number, once again, is WSY8031664. All right. Also call in if you have any questions, recommendations, or compliments. Alonzo, April, it is always a pleasure.
Kind sir.
Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. This is a production of MaximumFun.org. And that's what's up,
yo.
Come on now.
That's what's up.
Brother's gonna work it out. Brother's gonna work it out.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.